It's a good life, babe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans, episode 46 from Bonnaroo. That's my band. We're always tell everybody. It's our royalty free sure. music.
Hey everybody, welcome back. It's a good life, babe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans via Bonnaroo. This is day 4 for us and episode, I don't know, 10?
11.
11?
Yeah, this is so 11 for Bonnaroo.
We've been rocking it out. We've had a lot of good guests just to continue to plug the podcast. We had Patrick Clifford on, was a great guest, A&R guy from the 60s and 70s in New York. Mm-hmm. We had the Magic Hat guys on, and they referenced you, cool. Russ. Lots of good guests. Please go back and check it out. Look, all you guys have a long drive home. Listen to the podcast. We got hours and hours and hours now. But we're welcoming Russ Bennett to the show today. And Russ, thank you for coming on.
My pleasure.
Russ, my understanding, and look, I was here from year one at Bonnaroo, and we've talked about that kind of at ad nauseum, all the stories. And you were here from year one.
You bet.
And my understanding is that Superfly Presents obtained sort of the funding from the Dave Matthews people to do the festival, and they were like, Superfly is like four dudes. They're like, how do we produce this thing? And so they reached out to the people that did all those fish shows.
Correct.
At the military bases, right?
Yeah, and other places.
And so you had been a part of that, is that correct?
Yeah.
What was that experience like?
Working with fish?
Yeah, those big shows on those like airplane hangars or whatever.
Yeah, those shows were. They were great. They were transformative, I think. I mean, it was sort of the beginning of the era of the what we might call the modern day festival in America,
right.
Where they were, you know, doing some big shows, and they knew they wanted to do something a little more or a little different or a little more based in the European traditions.
Okay,
where
right.
they've been, you know.
Right, right. The festivals they had played in Europe,
yes,
they wanted to do something.
The festival scene
right.
here was, you know, sort of, it was nascent compared to now, and it was have a long line of traffic, get people in,
right.
put up a stage, and they would survive,
field.
And then they would leave. I mean, there was all, you know, variation
sure.
of that, but so the first festival I worked on with Fish was Clifford Ball. Plattsburgh Air decommissioned Air Force Base.
Right.
And we decided that we would start looking at, we were going to have a city of people, and in a city of people you have parks and you have places of social congress, and let's reach out to the campers a little bit and let's create an artistic environment for people to be in. And
that was your role, the sort of the art, the art
I just
design.
Started making stuff up, and then more. But yeah, we created a little village, Ball Square, there, and some other things, along with other artists. I mean, I'm sort of, in a way, I mean, we design and make things, but in a way, I'm sort of a midwife.
You're kind of a curator, would you say?
Yeah, and bringer, a facilitator.
Sure.
For other people, and you know, we work with all kinds of artists, and are honored and lucky to work with them and help them. Sometimes they don't know how to realize their idea.
So you help. That's the midway.
Yeah,
part.
We help
that's
that happen.
Part.
Right.
Right.
So I mean, that was the beginning of that. So yeah. We'd work. There was a few of us, myself, Rob Napier, and John Gerard. We'd work. That was like head of site, head of production, and. And
right.
whatever the hell I was,
right.
which, you know, we sort of have looked at as, because I have a background in planning and architecture and design.
How did that start? Can we back up a little bit to, like, because we're going to fast forward to Bonnaroo,
okay.
but can
yeah.
we back up to
yeah.
your experience, like, where did you grow up? Who were your parents? How'd you get into design? Like, you know. I know those are broad questions. Like,
yeah,
where are you from? Like,
yeah,
where,
I don't know.
What's your story?
Earth. I'm from Earth. I grew up outside. I was born outside of Boston. I grew up outside of Manhattan.
Yeah.
And so I had a lot of great opportunities for music and culture and art and museums and
In terms of an appreciation.
Yes, in terms of input, growing up as a kid.
Sure.
You know, one of the places that we lived was in Rye, New York, and we lived right next to Playland.
Right.
I think that was formative.
I'm sure at Playland. Exactly. You
know, we had it in the backyard, right. Basically, you know. Right. It never really dawned on me until quite a few years later. But at any rate, so skipping around, my parents were World War II people.
Yeah.
You know, they're from that generation, yep. served in the war, all of that, all of my relatives did. However it came about, I ended up working in construction.
Yep.
For a while, and I realized that I really had a joy for it and a knack for it and an understanding of design, and right. that people would come to us with things that they wanted to have built, and I would look at it and say, well, I think this is what you brought me, but I don't think it's what you, I think it's not going
to
be what you need, mm-hmm. or what you've articulated. So then we started doing more and more design. And to me, it's all the same. Whether it's, we're working on a big hotel right now, where we've worked on numbers of different commercial things.
The Magic
Residentials.
Hat.
Magic Hats Brewery. We just did another brewery up there called Foam Brewery. Young people, really knowledgeable. This is blowing up. But, you know, we made it a really nice immersive environment.
Nice.
And whether it's a piece of sculpture or, you know, something made out of plastic bottles, it's really all the same thing. It's understanding what your intentions are, what you want the people that you're dealing with to feel and understand. When I work with artists a lot of the time who have what sound like good ideas, one of the first thing I ask them is, how do you want me to feel after I've viewed your piece or partaken of your event?
Right.
How do you want me to be changed? And so once they can answer that question, then we can look at, is this thing actually going to do that?
Right. And then you can move forward in the process.
Yeah.
So that's right. The beginning of the process.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So getting back to the beginnings of Bonnaroo, as I mentioned before, I know that those guys reached out to your whole crew
yeah.
of folks who had produced the fish shows.
Yeah.
How did that relationship start in your memory? Like, what was your first, like, contacts with, you know, the Rick Farman or Rich?
Great. It was great. You know, I'm the old guy, number one. So, you know, I'm even older.
That time were in their 20s, I guess,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they were 20s. So, Rob Napier, who was sort of the site guy, he brought me down in. And, you know, I came down and one of our simple business plan guidelines is we only work with people we like. So
that was the business plan.
That's what we're trying to do on It's a Good Life, Babe.com.
That's right.
Podcast.
That's the first thing.
That's been a common theme, too, with all of our guests.
Yeah. It's like, okay.
Work with people you
like.
Okay.
We like
right.
it.
Right. Yeah.
We can figure this
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because there's going to be problems.
Because right? Napier came in and like built the roads, right?
Yeah,
the
yeah.
The whole,
yeah.
I mean, there were no roads here, Jeff. It was a big
no, there
were
some. But not, right. I mean, it was sort of like the back 60 over there.
Yep.
That was one of those things where, I mean, the thing was selling out. It was blowing up. You know, we were running out of space. And
right.
I was talking with Rob, and there was that space over there. And we were talking about putting the road in. It was going to cost a lot. People around here were like, oh, this is like winning the lottery, you know.
Right.
It's going to cost a lot of money. And I said, Rob, these are the numbers
right.
that piece of land is going to produce.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter. It's going to be a home run.
You can throw money at it because of the numbers.
Yeah.
Throw money
yeah.
at it.
Yeah.
And you guys did that.
Not stupidly, but, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like
wisely.
You look at all those things. So,
yeah.
Again, back to what I do is sort of a little bit more like the connective tissue because of my other backgrounds. I'm not just doing crepe paper at the dance, you know.
So you're helping out with the production as well.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
all one organism.
Sure.
So, to your question, so met the Superfly guys, and... you know, we hit it off, and I love New Orleans. They were all in New Orleans at
right.
the time. I've been to Jazz Fest many times. You know, it's like Mecca.
Sure.
And so then it was a little bit about learning you know, if I was going to do something with you or you guys, I go, okay, I need to know more about you. Okay, let's go have dinner. I'll want to come down to New Orleans. Why don't we, I see how you live. Let me see what your influences are. Now, some of those influences involve some partying.
It is rock and roll, right, after all,
and it's also New Orleans.
Well, I mean, we have to do some in-depth research.
All right, teasing our next guest, in-depth research.
Right, exactly. And so we had a great time getting to know each other, and learning about each other, and trying to take the things that were most important and valuable to them in the music and influences on them, so that whatever we were going to do to, you know, put on top of the skeleton or, you know, enhance it would be in that mode.
Right.
You know.
So can we talk about some of the art installations that I mean, the iconic things, the fountain.
Yeah.
Can you walk us through the process of how the fountain that happened, the bobbleheads, the
right,
all those things that were there year one.
Sure. The fountain, the year one, not much survived.
Because it was crepe paper.
Well, no, it wasn't. We burned a lot of stuff at the end. We had a hell of a fire. We had made this giant sort of mock Stonehenge kind of a thing, because that
right,
first year
exactly,
was around
sure,
the solstice.
Right.
So we used that, you know, anyway, yeah, some of that stuff did not survive.
I'd love to see some images of that.
Yeah,
if
we made
some
a
available,
giant stabile, which, you know, that went the way of all things, because one of the things that we needed to do, they were renting the land, right? I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. Would
right,
return the land to exactly how it was before.
This is before they bought the farm.
Oh, I see, right, before they bought it.
They didn't buy the farm until before,
they didn't own the farm. No, right. So the farmer, you know, you put a road in on a farm, if that road has any distance, you start to add it up, that's acreage. That's acreage that now is not productive for
the farmer.
For the farmer until
right,
that
right,
road goes away. So, you know, we had to be in it, which was right. It was respectful. It's the right
sure,
way to be. But so the fountain was, you know, it's hot here.
Right. Not this year, but.
It's hot. Yeah, it's not that bad this year.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Spencer's, this is his first year and he's complaining about the heat. And I'm like, dude, you have no idea. Stop
bitching.
Oh, man. Stop
it
bitching.
Gets so
this is,
hot
this
here,
is maybe the best weather
yeah,
ever.
This is the best weather ever.
Thank you.
Ever.
No doubt.
Thank
yes,
you. I've been trying
zero,
to tell this dude.
Zero
he's
doubt,
like.
I'm not, it's been great weather.
I mean, we had one
sometimes
night.
I'm in the sun too long.
Thursday night this year was, people were cold.
Exactly.
They were, because the dew point's so high.
Exactly.
You know, the humidity,
yes,
so, the dew point's
exactly,
so high that they sold out all the hoodies.
All the hoodies, yeah.
So that was
good
unusual,
problem, man.
But so at any rate, the fountain was, how do we look at this? What do we do? How can we make something cool? And John, I think it might have been John's idea. John or Rick, they were communal
sure,
ideas. You know, everybody sits up. And I don't care who had the idea.
Of
I never. To me, it doesn't matter. I don't need credit.
Like you said, it's an organism.
It's an organism.
Yeah.
So, but when it came down to it, it's sort of, okay, how can we make an iconic piece that will sort of last for a while, recycle the water? I worked with a guy from Disney who'd done all of Disney's fountains for a long time. You know, we researched around it to get at the mechanics.
Right.
What can we afford to do? What kind of nozzles should
right,
we use? You know,
right,
laminators
exactly,
or
right,
these kinds of things.
The drainage.
You know, I mean, it's not
right,
just a freaking garden hose.
No, clearly. Slip and slide.
Right. So
you do have a slip and slide.
Yeah, we do. Right. We have had a slip and slide. And one of the main, my main concerns were, so I wanted to be able to have a fountain, but I didn't want to retain any water because I didn't want anybody to be able to fall down and figure out how to drown.
Yeah, safety.
Yes,
you know,
right.
So the, all
safety
that water
first,
just sheets away. Safety has to be first.
It has
in
to be.
Everything.
Right.
That's the number one thing.
Exactly.
So that's how that came about. You know, that sort of a thing. And, you know, it was really exciting the first year. For Christmas, it was like, wow, it works, you know.
Yeah. I remember your crew hustling around, man.
Man, we were crunching it.
Because I was working credentials. I don't remember that. But that was
yeah,
my first year I worked for Chris Kroll.
Yeah.
And me and Ruth Carlton ran credentials.
Right.
So I had to go to you
that
and get your whole crew,
right, yeah,
you know, and get everybody's names.
Right.
And I thought, this is the hardest working staff on the site, as far as I could tell.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the medical crew ended up working super hard once the doors opened, but in terms of pre-doors, you guys were hustling harder than anyone, including staging.
Totally. No, there's no doubt. I am very, very fortunate, and I have people, and over the years, you know, people from all over the country that, for whatever reason, want to work with us, and they know that we are... You know, we have some really good mechanics who are really good at making stuff, but they are hard workers. And if we have to work 24 hours because, you know, the people are going to show up, then that's what we're going to do.
That's what I remember that first year. Yeah, you guys were working around the clock.
We just would work, because the other problem that we have is there's always another idea.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we can fit that in.
Exactly. Right.
And then you have to end up
even, even as you're working under a deadline, the job is expanding.
It's expanding.
It's getting bigger.
And then, of course, with you know, with these kinds of things, whether it would be Fish or Bonnaroo or whatever, if ticket sales are going really well, then there's room for more ideas.
Right.
You know, and it's like, well, okay, let's try and make it happen. So I always tell the people that that work with us. If you think that you're a sprinter, you're in trouble, because this is a marathon.
Right.
Exactly. So if you know you're in a marathon, then you know how to prepare yourself mentally and physically.
Exactly.
Don't drink too much, hydrate, you know, all the normal things.
Yeah, because, yeah. Right. Exactly.
Because eat your breakfast tacos.
It's going to be crushing, you know. So yeah, kudos to those guys always, and gals.
Yeah,
those people.
Yeah,
they work hard.
They worked. I mean, like I said, it was amazing to watch. The just the painting, the construction. The again, I was running around to every single department, and the riggers were working hard too.
Yeah,
obviously, because they were building one of the biggest stages that had been built at that point, right?
Right. That was Mike Pinner.
So Mike Pinner's crew, y'all's crew, were working so freaking hard, and I felt bad having to go around and badger you guys for all your names.
Right.
To get the credentials done, you know? Because there are already people on site, but it's like Chris Crosley, you got to get all the names, got to get the database, got to get the credential. That's it. We're running this like a professional thing.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's what we did.
Yeah.
And so it was fun for me being out that first year, just seeing firsthand what you guys were doing. And then seeing it realized.
Right.
And look, some of it happened by doors.
Right.
Then some stuff added on Friday.
Right.
Then some stuff added on Saturday.
And you know what? One of the things that we learned quite a few years ago, quite accidentally, was we had a whole bunch of cool things we were doing for a show. And one of those things didn't get done in time. So we had to stop.
Right.
And then...
Do like it in the
Friday night.
Exactly.
That thing got completed.
And suddenly it's done.
And what we learned was that is cool.
Exactly.
Because
it's a reveal. It's a reveal.
Because it's another reveal. It's not like, okay, this is it. This is my phone. We're done. Okay,
exactly.
It's blue. Boom.
It's
going to be blue for the whole weekend.
Things can happen as the festival is going on.
And I love that about this festival.
And so that's one of the things that we have tried to do is the reveal. And then also that led to, you know, we brought a lot of the early street performers and buskers.
Buskaroos were cool.
We had some crazy, I mean...
Rich Goodstone was like, if you don't capture the buskaroos on video, you're fired.
Right. I think, you know, in our Centeroo Boneyard down there, we had sort of at the peak of that, it's a little bit more dispersed. We're a little bit more adult about it now.
Yeah.
But I remember we had 250 people camped back there that were all... buskers, musicians, street performers, artists of all kinds, because there were some of the people staying in the hotels. And then I always love the thing that happens when you cross-pollinate, when you make everybody work together and you say, here are the things that I want to have happen, and this person's in a marching band, and this person's a stilter, and this person's some kind of a bizarre
stilter. So the stilter can be in the marching band.
Yeah, so that everything starts, you know, the mixture of juices is what really makes stuff great. It's like the super jam in a way. The mixture of juices is what makes things really good.
What was the year that you guys started firing shit off into the sky on Sunday? And that's a crude way to put it.
You mean fireworks?
I get it. Yeah. Fireworks. No, but it felt different.
I think
than
it
fireworks.
Was year two.
It didn't seem like traditional fireworks.
Yeah, well, we've done fireworks a few times.
Yeah.
I don't think we did it year one. Did we do it year one?
Back over where the water slide is now.
Yeah.
1 year you guys blew some stuff.
Oh, we
the
had
sky.
Some. Yeah, we did. No, those were not. That was different shit.
Right.
Excuse me. That was different
saying.
Stuff.
That was firing shit into the sky.
You don't have to.
It was like
balloons.
It was like balloons. It was like little tiny, like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No. It was inflated. It was the hot air inflated things, right? Wasn't that it? We released a bunch of. Bags that were inflated with hot air.
Yeah, we had. I went to Burning Man somewhere
right.
around.
Of course you did.
You know, I've been meaning to go for years and years and years, and then finally I went. You know, I got to go and do some cross pollination, and I went out to Burning Man. I just went out there, drove in. I didn't want to be anything but just another person.
Sure.
And went and was astounded by what I saw there, and met a lot of great people and the founders and all that stuff.
What year was this?
Approximately 2004.
Yeah.
Five,
so a couple years after
like
Bonnaroo started.
Yeah, shortly after.
Yeah.
And I thought, back to motivation, one of the reasons that I work on these things, I am motivated by trying to make a better life for people, whether it's designing their house and building it, or they're expanding their business, or whatever that is. And I have my own values, and I don't need to say what they are, like, I'm for or again this guy or that guy. But I know what we need. And so I put those ingredients in
right.
what we do. And I think we need to work. So one of the reasons of going to Burning Man and looking at what we're doing with fish and what we're doing with Bonnaroo and some of these other things is to get horizontal connections across the society.
Right.
So that we're all working together. We're not necessarily eating the same bologna sandwich, but we're all working together. We're not at cross purposes in separate silos.
Right.
So I went there, and this is a long-winded answer to your question of what the hell was going into the sky, was I saw a lot of great artists there, and I worked with a woman, Leslie Pritchett, who was the first director of the nonprofit Black Rock Arts Foundation, which is the nonprofit side of Burning Man. And so I would ask her about who should I reach out to that would be responsible and responsive and this and that and the other thing.
Sure.
And I worked with a fellow named Charlie Smith from Atlanta, on this side of the country, and he had a whole network of people. And so we had a lot of burners for a number of years here doing some stuff. It was
right?
a little bit nuts, I can tell you. The first year I had those guys here, we had all these, propane-fired things, and we had other great performance art. And I didn't really know. I mean, this is a much smaller space than Burning Man, and suddenly we have like thousands of people like mushing up against fire, and that
right.
was like nuts,
right.
So we had to get some
to
serious barricades and whatnot. But
exactly.
Yeah,
those things were, and we got a little grief from this. There was one guy who would make these smoke rings.
Yes.
Mm, that would float up into
that's
sky.
What it was.
That's
and
what
it,
you were talking
it
about.
Was a, it
yeah.
was like a,
that was a
and,
ship
and it was like a, if you were smoking a cigar or something, you went,
that's exactly what it was, but on this giant
and
scale.
And these giant things would sort of go
the
up around
scale.
In there.
Yeah.
And
into the air.
You have to wait for the wind to be just right, just like a hot air balloon.
Exactly.
And it's got to
right.
be the right thing.
And people would just stop everything they're doing.
Stop.
They would be tripping on their LSD and their mushrooms, which is apropos to our next guest. And just freak out on what the fuck was going on
right.
in the sky.
Right.
How's that happening?
And I thought it was really cool, but there were some people who were just so disgusted by it because the smoke was sort of blackish.
Oh, I see.
Right.
And he used about a quart of, a mixture of kerosene and gasoline to make these things. To sort of, you put it in I'm forgetting the name of like an attenuator. It makes a gas.
Gotcha.
And then you release it. And, which is a billionth of what most of the kids were spending on gas to get here.
Exactly.
But there were a few people who were like, you're polluting the universe. And I couldn't say we weren't.
Right, because we are.
But, because we are.
But it's
and I think we need to be mindful of that. No, I take it seriously. We need to be mindful of the environment. But so we did that for a couple of years, and then we decided that, you know, the negatives weren't
sure
were adding up.
And then you guys had for a while, and I don't know if you still do. You had the LED trees sort of over here.
Oh right, yeah, in front of the comedy tent. Sonic motion.
Yeah, that motion around thing. The comedy tent and between the cinema tent. Yeah. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
That would I would just go over there and just decompress at night, lay down there.
Sure.
Right.
You know, it was just beautiful.
Yeah.
It was like an LED forest.
Yeah, it was a little forced and it was motion actuated a little bit, and you know, in today's technology, that's like, I mean, you can do that with anything.
But with your phone.
That was old technology, you know, that fella had done. I think it was an MIT guy. You know, it was a lot of wiring.
Right?
Had done it 15 years before or something like that.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it was.
It's a real ones and zeros type of thing.
Yeah, or almost if you think about the older sort of neon and bulb type signs.
Sure.
How many freaking wires there are?
Exactly.
To do that, and now it's an LED, and everybody goes, "Oh, well, it's an LED."
Easy.
You know, we just go on. Exactly. It's blue.
How does that change your business now, where people are just like, "This should just be easy"?
Well,
does it, I mean, I guess it doesn't change it from a design.
I don't think it changes it at all.
It just makes things easier.
Yeah, I mean, back to what we were talking about earlier about intentions.
Right.
It's oil paint is a technology.
Right.
Watercolors are a technology.
That's right.
Putting sticks together is a technology.
Pencil
sketches. You know, I get it. I still use what I call pencil CAD or iPencil, because it has to come from your brain through something so that you can communicate it to somebody
else. That's right.
Else. And then you know what it is that you're trying to what you're trying to do for people,
right.
Or what you're trying to say, or you know if your ego is part of the problem or not. So technology is sometimes a little siren to be wary of, because when technology is new, everybody goes, "Ooh, that's so cool!"
You don't want the
but
technology
the content
to drive the process.
Might. Be horrible.
Sure. Yeah, you don't
you
want
know?
The technology.
So you have to know what
process.
Your content is.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah.
Russa, anecdotally, I want to just describe a couple of things. We haven't had too much interaction. Joel knows you. You've seen me around shooting video and stuff through the years. As one guy with long gray hair to another guy. At Rick Farman's wedding, I gotta say, you cut a fine figure in a suit, which I've never seen you in before.
Right.
And I was drawn to you visually shooting Rick's wedding.
Right.
And I appreciate that, because it was some great footage that I used in the final cut. And but to that end, I also want to just say that one time Joel and I were here, and we were walking around, and we turned around, and we saw you coming down the road in a hot red convertible Mustang, I think it was.
That's true.
And I wondered, are you a car man? Are you like a nice ride?
Well, yeah, I like a nice ride. Yeah, I mean, so there's a couple of things to the convertible side of things. One,
okay.
We're in a warm place, and the top should go down. But... in the earlier days, it was a lot more practical and more necessary for me than it is today. I mean, I oftentimes, in the build of this show, will walk just around in here in circles 20 miles.
Wow.
So, because I started measuring it. Holy crap.
Wow.
So one of the things I try to do when I come to a show and look at a piece of land and understand what it is you want to accomplish is I want to look at the world through the eyes of the fan. That's, I go make myself be a fan,
right.
And so that I can understand how I'm going to react to the different things in the environment that I'm going to come across.
Right.
So if you're riding around and you've got a hat with a brim on, and you're in a pickup truck,
you're not going to
you
see
you don't
it.
Have a horizon.
Right.
And the horizon, the entirety of the world that you experience, is part of what
is contextualized by the horizon.
Correct. Is all of the inputs that are happening to you. So driving around with the top down, this is a great rationalization.
I love this. I love this. One of the best.
Is you can cover a fair amount of ground driving slowly in a pizza a golf cart.
Yes.
So that's all true. And then you add in, I have convertibles.
Yes.
And the most important feature in a car when this weather is good is that the top go down and the sound system be good. The transmission can suck.
Yes.
That's okay.
Right, right. That's right. But the sound system and the top sounds, go down, that's it. That's the important part.
This is life.
Just super tangential, when you went out to the Burning Man, did you get a chance by any chance on the way out there, if you're coming from San Francisco, I don't know if there's another route in or not, there's a bar that's out there. It's like the last stop before you get out to the Burning Man. I've been.
Oh, I know where you mean.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. And I've never partaken, though.
If you ever get a chance, go out there, because it's a little bit fetishistic on my part, but I love it as a part of Americana.
Right.
You know that they do the speed tests out there.
Right.
With the rocket cars and
everything. Right, right,
and in this bar, there's these amazing photos of all these people that have tried to break the world record of land speed.
Oh, that's cool.
These rocket cars and everything. Right. Yeah. So just wanted to mention that
and see if you guys think.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we're about to segue from Russ to our next guest, and our next guest are super interesting young folks who are going to talk to us about medical science of psychedelics, and I may be getting that wrong, but we'll correct it if I am when they get on. But Peter, wanted to know if you, Russ, have sort of a quote or a philosophy or something that you live by. That's like a mantra type of thing. This is from our next guest asking you a question.
Yeah. There's no one. There's no one thing. I mean, we have this thing in our society where everybody wants, okay, what's your favorite color? What's the best band? What? There's no one thing. But now I'm going to lie and say of many of the many things that I believe, one of the things that I try to do for myself and try to do for everybody else is help you to be the best you can be. Help you to be on the path that you want to be, that will make you be the person that you want to be. Because you know, a lot of times you get off your path and then you have to get back on it. So if we can provide a little joy, we can make you laugh. Right. We put love in everything we do. It's in the cake, man. It's in there. You can't get it out. Okay? Exactly. It's in there. It's going down.
I think it's in the cake.
It's in the cake.
Well, listen, Russ, do you have anything else you want to add? I mean, I have one last thing to say to you, but do you have anything you want to, we didn't maybe touch on? Or
Bonnaroo is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful experience for everybody that can participate.
Yeah.
However they can.
Yeah. Well, look, man, I want to wish you a happy Father's Day.
Yeah.
Because I just met your lovely daughter who's how old?
Olive Orbit Bennett is one and a quarter orbits old.
And she is beautiful.
Yeah, she's
and
awesome.
She seems vivacious and vibrant. And, dude, seriously, happy Father's Day. It's been so nice to see you rolling around with your daughter and your lovely wife. It's been great.
And so, Russ, if you're in New Orleans, promise us that you'll look us up, all right?
Okay.
And, please. Let's go out, you know, hit DBA, see some music together.
We'll do some research.
Like do some research. Right. Exactly.
We live by the Jazz Fest. We live by the Jazz Fest, so if you're ever in town for Jazz Fest, we've got an open door policy for the bathroom and the beers and all that stuff. We're two blocks away.
Right.
And, you know, again, go down to DBA, the whole nine yards, everything, and all that.
Awesome. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
So,
Russ, thank you. Have a great rest of your weekend.
You too.
And happy Father's Day.
Yeah!
Yeah. All right, great. Okay, guys, can you come over here? And we're going to switch up places here real quick, folks. We're going to have our next guest come on. We don't always do this on the It's a Good Life 8 podcast, Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans, but now we're going to go ahead and switch up and have our next guest come on, and we're going to talk a little bit about the medical science around psychedelics. Well, these are some folks that we met back in the campground area, and just in keeping with the way that It's a Good Life 8 podcast is, in terms of our philosophy, we talk to people. We get to know people in the different environments that we're in. This is the first festival since we started back in July of last year that we've been to. And we're hoping that there's many more. We like to meet people, invite them on the podcast, and that's what we're doing right now. Yeah. So to that end, we're going to have these people go ahead and get mic'd up, and we're going to have them put on some headsets right here. And we're going to continue with our episode 46 podcast from Bonnaroo.
And yeah, shout out to Russ Bennett real quick. Look up Russ Bennett online if you have any design needs for a craft brewery or for your house. This guy is an auteur, wouldn't you say, Jeff? You would call him an auteur. And he's the dude, if you have a project that you want something completely special that is mindful and creative, Russ is your man.
Yeah, absolutely. I can just say that Russ, in the years that we've been coming here, the design elements are varied, idiosyncratic, different, and always executed at a high level.
That's right.
With a great
eye for design.
With a great eye for design, a high level of creativity.
And the execution.
Exactly.
And safety.
Yeah. So, safety first, and a true professional.
Exactly.
Russ Bennett.
And how many minutes are we into this pod?
Right now, let me just look at it right now. We are at about 37 minutes.
The reason we say this, folks, is it's goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Jules Tales from New Orleans. We let everybody know we don't edit, you scrub. So if you want to scrub through the Russ Bennett bit, which I think you'd be crazy, and just get to Peter's bit that we're about to introduce, you can do that. But these are two very completely different segments. So look, there's a lot of note writing going on right now. I don't know what's happening with that. We're a pretty organic show. We just like to sit down and talk to people, as we just did with Russ. And so I'll just start by introducing Peter. Peter, and your name again is?
My name is Yegor Mikushkin.
Oh, Yegor, okay.
Oh, where's that from?
Kazakhstan. I was born in Kazakhstan.
Kazakhstan?
But Russian. I'm Russian.
So how do you guys know each other? Because you guys came in together.
Well, you know, I saw his stand. He was playing music and allowing others to touch some instruments and be creative. And he also was presenting his artwork there.
That's better.
And Sydney, which is my girlfriend over here to my left, she was talking to him, and he told her about an experience that I can very much relate to, which was something related to DMT and its benefits to his well-being, and something interesting I thought would to bring him on and discuss his creative process.
Sure.
So
do you want to talk about that?
I think
for our viewers from New Orleans, we've got a lot of people from New Orleans who drink a lot but don't do a lot of psychedelics. Can you tell us DMT?
Okay, so it is actually, it's in your brain in a way that it's in most living things that have a central nervous system similar to ours. It's very similar to serotonin and melatonin.
Gotcha.
And which are things that kind of control our mood and our sleeping patterns, our metabolism. So it's kind of like our personality.
Sure.
And so similar to computers, kernels, like the engines that run it, we have similar things. One of them that also controls dreaming, which is DMT.
Okay.
It is very similar to what's in mushrooms, psychedelic mushrooms, which is an edible form in a way of, and so culturally, years ago, like thousands of years ago, in the Amazonian tribes and a few other tribes, they somehow, supposedly from history, tells us that the plants told them to mix two different plants that alone don't do anything. But when they mix them, one is it kind of inhibits the brain from metabolizing free radicals and stuff and all the other things, cleaning itself. And so that way when you consume the other one, it's potent enough to have effect. And then this, you know, this must have inspired a lot of their life and stuff. They found it very sacred. When I look back, I always judge, or at least try to see, how did people, similar to what Russ was saying, you know, what was the
intent?
What was the kind of like the fans, but like of that time, what did people do for life? Like, how did they party? What did they do with their
life?
So they didn't. I don't think there was much like destructive escapism through like, you know, rebellious partying. I think it was extremely educational.
And productive, right? In terms
of
productivity.
It was very safe. It was very careful, you know, and it was never extreme, like, poisonous substances. The substances were always safe.
What are you talking about? Like, what tribes?
Ayahuasca. Sorry, I should name it. So ayahuasca. If you look up ayahuasca, it's
a religion. Let me ask you about what about the Mayans? Were the Mayans doing?
Yes. So yes, they had peyote. I believe they also have yopo, which is a seed.
Okay. I've spent 4 months of my life just going to every single Mayan temple, and because it's magical. I mean, and I assume that the inspiration towards that sort of architecture
correlates to maybe psychedelics.
Sure, like I would assume.
Or DMT.
Yeah.
Lucid dreaming.
I would assume so.
It's something that we can't necessarily point and say, yeah, this is the reason why this architecture is so beautiful, or this is the reason why this is happening, or whatnot. But as far as modern day studies and what have been researched upon is just on how certain entheogens such as LSD or mushrooms affect the brain and the relationship between its connectivity within the neurological, the neurocortex. So like a study done by Imperial College London, they had a sample of 20 healthy young volunteers, and they were able to analyze these 20 healthy young volunteers through fMRI scans under the influence of 75 micrograms of LSD. And what they found was that...
How much is that?
75
is
micrograms.
Are you tripping?
That is...
In my parlance?
That's like a closed eye visual body sensation. It depends on your set and setting, which is something that we want to go into a lot.
Yeah.
So the big part about it is what these people did was they were very much in a controlled environment where they had a blindfold and, you know, they're very much in their own heads. So what this study showed is that the parts of the brain that don't necessarily communicate as well together on a normal day-to-day process, under the influence of LSD, they start connecting. So like the motor cortex along with the visual cortex and the prefrontal cortex just start communicating and, you know, finding new ways and solutions to solve certain issues. Like from studies, or not even studies, just anecdotes from, you hear from James Fadiman or Steve Jobs or individuals.
Joe Rogan.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There are a lot of individuals who have delved into these new forms of medicine to kind of cure long and persisting defects within the human psychology, such as depression, anxiety,
which are linked to like culturally, because, you know, I think we don't really understand our roots in a sense, and we don't have this independence and like maybe an ignorant comfort to our lives, because we don't grow our own food, we don't access our own water supply. These basic things, we don't find them important, the general kind of adolescent population, you know what I'm saying? Where
like you get your food at the McDonald's.
Yeah. So there's
a disconnect.
There's a disconnect.
To life, to earth.
Well, what's really interesting right now, at least as far as organizations that are really pushing the FDA to approve, for example, MDMA therapy for patients, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, MAPS for short, they're, I believe, in stage 3 or 4 in getting MDMA approved for PTSD therapeutic purposes under the right conditions. Studies have already shown in a statistically significant manner that they drastically reduce the anxiety levels of individuals who have PTSD or are cancer patients and have to count down the days till they're gone from this earth.
Right, right.
There's a lot of torture in that kind of mindset. Your mind creates stories where you fear more than you probably should.
Sure.
And what these substances have shown through studies done by, you know, MAPS or Johns Hopkins or just Beckley Imperial Research Programs, they all show that, you know, LSD, entheogens, MDMA, psilocybin, they have benefits because they deliver results to those who have issues. With depression and anxiety.
Well, you should know, Peter, that you're talking to two dudes on a podcast who are like data-driven atheists. So, like,
data-driven atheists.
I mean, I consider myself a data-driven atheist.
I pay
attention to the science, and so everything.
Fact-based.
Yeah, facts-based. Everything you're saying is speaking to me because I care about the science because I believe in the data.
Definitely.
You know what I'm saying? And but you're a pretty serious cat, dude. Can I just say?
Oh,
are you always as serious?
Am I always as serious?
Yeah.
Not
just serious because you're on a podcast.
No.
I'm very serious.
I'm very much enjoying the idea behind delivering quality information
on a platform. I see what you're saying. Like,
sorry to interrupt.
But if you're talking about the issue you're talking about, it probably requires a seriousness in delivery. For people to not think you're a complete fucking flake.
Of course.
Because you want to get the data right.
The negative connotation between drug use and hallucinogens.
Exactly.
There are many cases or stereotypes where I'm sure you all have heard, if you take a certain amount of doses of LSD, you're considered clinically insane.
And you're going to have like the flashbacks 20 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
We were joking about this on the podcast the other day. I can't remember who it was. But I was like, I never got the flashback. I feel cheated. Like, I wanted.
You got shorted on that.
I got shorted. I was spending my $20, and I thought I was going to keep coming back. And I never did.
You know what I never got about the flashback is that everybody was like, it's so fearful. It's so fearful. And I was like, why?
Why? You
know, I'm like, wait, maybe
the first time?
I'm sorry, I get a free trip?
I get a free trip.
Right.
Give me the free trip.
And if it happens while I'm at work, then I just go, hey, guys, you know, I'm not feeling really good, but I'm lying because I am.
I'm feeling great.
And then I'm just like, oh, I understand that I'm having a flashback.
But look,
right now.
Hey, we got to get back to who you are because we didn't even introduce you. By the way,
my name is Pedro Vivas.
Okay.
And I am a.
Where are you from? What's your deal?
I'm from Miami, Florida.
Okay. Where are your parents from?
Nicaragua.
So you're first generation?
First generation what? American?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So your parents came from Nicaragua.
Also, first generation college student for my family.
Good for you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Yes.
And where are you going to school?
I was at New College of Florida, which was actually the place where the founder of the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies was started by.
Right.
A man named Rick Doblin. Amazing character. If you have show notes, definitely put a link to
yes.
Rick Doblin. He has been the forefront face man of pushing MDMA and its benefits, because we really need to stem away from these drugs that just keep you on a dependence, such as Prozac,
Paxil.
Sure. I mean, sure, my brother's bipolar, and it's rough. They're like the drug cocktails that go into it, and they don't know what the fuck. It's trial and fucking error.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, okay, we're gonna put you up to 5 of this and 10 of this and 3 of this, and now it's going to be 3 times a day or 2 times a day.
And just to feel fine.
It's fucked up,
yeah,
dude. Like, I went through this for a whole year helping my brother during a crisis,
uh-huh.
And there was just in terms of his personal safety, you know, and his well-being. And it is some fucked up, the pharmaceutical fucking thing in this country, or maybe in the world, It's disastrous.
Well, you know, I mean,
it's barbaric.
It can be barbaric. It's like a $4 billion industry. Like it's
that's the only reason to care is if you're an investor.
You have pharmaceutical companies taking doctors out to lunches and dinners to just allow them to sell their products to their patients based on their own defects. Which are necessary. They're normal with the human experience.
It's a human. There's a thing called a human condition.
The human condition.
And that human condition can be challenging psychologically and emotionally.
Yes. 100%.
But there are ways to deal with it.
Yeah.
That are not that don't require Zoloft and Paxil
or actually psychedelics either, because meditation can take you to this same state of mind or thinking. Because what we're describing today is specifically is just psychedelics as a mode of transportation to a way of thought.
Gotcha.
So it's a matter of being that kind of picture yourself in a position of a general, where you're looking at your army from a mountaintop, and you can start picking out the pieces on where you need to focus more of, focus less of, prioritize. And what LSD or entheogens, psilocybin do is that they put you in that they take you out of the current of random thoughts that you just listen to yourself. Because let me give you a better example. When you wake up in the morning,
I have an example for you, but you go first.
When you wake up in the morning, you're constantly talking to yourself.
Yeah, you have inner thoughts.
Your inner thoughts. Mm-hmm. But the vast majority of people don't realize is that those inner thoughts can be silenced. And a lot of those inner thoughts are just bullshit. They're just a lot of trash that nobody needs to be paying attention to, because it's your limbic system trying to keep you alive because it has a fear of whatever can happen. I mean,
the inner thoughts are based on fears about survival.
Exactly. We all need to survive. So
I can't tell you how many times I've told myself, you're full of shit.
Yes.
Just stop it.
And then sometimes it comes out of my mouth.
Just breathe for a second and eat.
But it also has water.
Just shut the fuck up.
And one of the greatest things about that is, like, I really love this quote. I don't know who said it, but I've heard it once, and I'm always gonna keep it with me. And it's, never believe everything you think. Don't believe everything you think. Specifically.
No, know you're full of shit. Like you just said, Jeff.
Yeah. I mean, know you're full of shit, and it definitely relates to
that. Like,
because it relates to some physical.
In a room full of people, don't say it out loud.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that.
Yes. It's up your credibility and
So look, man,
we try to have humor all the time on that.
Yeah, we gotta have fun,
man. So we gotta have fun with the show. You know what I'm saying?
So look, I was
not to minimize any of the seriousness.
Exactly. I was in grad school. I was in grad school in Northern Arizona University studying to be an applied health psychology, which is applied health psychology. There's only like two programs in the country at the time, and it was meant to keep communities healthy, right?
But just like. On a general point, or specifically targeted
kind of in
social
communities and industrial,
so commercial, like impoverished communities.
No, it was more like it was focused on like corporate culture and municipality in terms of like how do you take communities and try and keep them healthy, right?
When industries are already being
and corporate culture
taken away,
in corporate culture also, that's where the money was going to be at, right? Was to like. Try and keep people from getting sick at work mentally and also from a physical health perspective. So it was applied health psychology. There were only, because I didn't want to be, I'd got my undergrad degree in psychology. I didn't want to sit on a couch and talk to somebody all day. You know, I wanted to affect more people. But here's the story. One night on Halloween, I took some mushrooms. And I went up and I climbed up the great goddamn Spencer. Can you look up the San Francisco peaks? We went all the way to the top. Look, Flagstaff's at 7,000 feet already, and the San Francisco peak is at 12,000 feet. And there's some serious fucking snow up there, dude. At October 31st, I mean it's cold as fuck.
So how did you feel taking the mushrooms? Like, what is your perspective on it?
Well, I'll tell you, I rolled out. I mean, you disconnect from your thoughts, you know, to some degree. And I had the ambition to hike, do a hike that normally you have to plan for. And, like, so it's kind of, like, irresponsible in the sense of, like, normally you do this hike, you start at 10 a.m., and you get up there by 4, and you hustle back down by 7. But this was more like midnight, I'm going up to the fucking thing. Right?
On mushroom.
Yeah.
Do you know how many grams you took?
And so, but here's what I thought. I was like halfway.
Do you know how many grams you took?
I don't. I do not. So I was halfway up. I was with a crew of like 6 people. And we were completely underdressed for the experience, and we ended up having to huddle at the top of the mountain, like,
magical.
Just hug each other.
Beautiful.
In order to stay alive. Like, but then when we rolled back down, we literally, like, rolled back down. It's like, got on my ass and just, like, surfed down the snow, you know, as far as I could. We got down, like, in 30 minutes, which
right.
you never
yeah,
get
which
down
you never get
minutes.
That, yeah, right.
I mean, it's 7,000 to 12,000 feet. You know, it's 5,000 feet of climbing. So, but anyway, at some point halfway through, I thought to myself, this academia shit sucks. And I dropped out of college.
Just for that experience.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, I mean, I went ahead and I finished out because I was teaching undergrad statistics. So I was doing that. And I got through my course load, and I got A's in all my courses, but I had to finish out just for like financial perspective. But I decided that I was done because I didn't want to live in academia. I want to live in the real fucking world. And that was the thought that I had while on mushrooms, that I did not want to live my whole life in academia. And I'm better off for it. So the only reason I came to New Orleans, the only reason I met this dude, the only reason I met this dude, was because I decided not to be in the ivory tower of academia. And that thought happened while I was on mushrooms, for whatever it's worth. That's just an anecdote. And you're about science. That's
and that's something that's super, that I can completely relate with at the same time. But it's kind of like you gain more focus within yourself by identifying and being aware of your own priorities and avoiding the distractions around you, such as how you said academia, how you wanted to get out there and go into the world. Right. And that's something that, you know, meditation teaches.
I could have just meditated.
You could have. But you know what, life is short, and sometimes you need to get results. And sometimes, and people are impatient, you know?
Right.
Like, you know, you have people, meditating is a long process, and if you have anxiety or depression on top of that human
sometimes
condition,
you need a trigger.
You need a trigger.
Like a light switch.
And it's not the only way. Like, but that personal anecdote is definitely, it definitely relates a lot to the separation of your thoughts and realizing what to
prioritize on.
Right. And what not to. And I know, Igor was talking to me about how he separated his own thought processes in almost a lucid state under the experience of DMT, I believe.
Well, mushrooms. I mean, mushrooms.
It was mushrooms.
Yep.
Mushrooms.
So, you know, I think DMT is it's kind of hard to describe that. It's a very just like it's very fast, but the edible in the edible form. I mean, it is a DMT. It's 4-hydroxy.
And when you say fast, do you mean how long it takes?
Like, yeah, yes, the duration.
The duration,
like 5 minutes.
Right.
You know,
Okay.
Yeah, it's very quick. It's very quick.
What's the stuff that I'm hearing about? And I'm sorry to cut you off, but I hear all these celebrities are going down to Brazil to do this particular
ayahuasca.
No, that's what it is. Ayahuasca. That's exactly.
Okay.
That's the same. There's like a smokable kind of form when you extract it, alkaloid. But when you eat it, when they were cooking, they make like a tea out of it. They heat up different bark, and they drink it. But when I was younger, I've always been doing artwork my whole life. Always been drawing and doing stuff like that. But
and folks, when he says when he was younger, sorry to cut you off, you look like you're like 18.
Oh, thanks. I'm 26 now, so this is, I don't want to give a number to like what I'm talking about, because you know. Just like at one point in the past, I didn't know I had a blockade in my kind of perception of everything, and I don't think anybody could ever know, because it's like taking off glasses that you didn't know you had on.
Sure.
Like that, it's like, it's really hard to explain. That's the thing. The awakening is not pleasant or scary. It just is. And you know, obviously, if you take it the wrong way, yeah. I mean, if you don't take it with a grain of salt and try to just like make kind of like see like how does that play into everything else and see it as the end, then yeah, then you know it might scare you if you see it that like you know literal. But anyhow, I was drawing, but at this point, you know, I was doing a lot of anime, just kind of copying stuff. I was very immature, childish, I think, in my kind of talent as an artist.
Sure. You know?
And there was a point where I drew. It was my first mushroom trip, and I drew something during it because I was just kind of like maybe anxious, just had to get my mind off. But I realized I just went right into the paper and just started drawing. And for the first time in my life, I just didn't think about what to draw. I had no goal. And that was probably the biggest pivot point in my whole life, because the next day I ripped that page out of my book and I threw it out because I was like, people will know. And I was like kind of ashamed. I was ashamed that I went there. I thought, you know, they're going to kick me out and kick me out of the house or something. I thought my parents were going to kill me. So, you know, but then afterwards I was like, you know, just going to school. It was like I was in class sitting and I started drawing. And I'm like, whoa. And it didn't stop. Like, automatically, that's it. There was no second thought, second guessing. Like, what to draw? Is it going to be good? What do I do? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Was it for? Like, I mean, in a sense,
it's that idea of loss of control. Like, well, knowing that you're not going to know what's going to happen.
Well, that's the thing. It's very specific to the 2D. Because when you're working with architecture, like what Russ was talking about, you know, like you have to have a motive because you're moving so many pieces and so many people. Your palette is so big, and the 3D world is not forgiving as the 2D. Like in the 2D, you know, there's maybe layers you have to do, like the background, middle ground, foreground. But you could go back in and just tweak the background because it's 2D. You know, nobody will know. Uh-huh. So. Mm-hmm. But in the 3D world, it's a micron off. That house is gonna fall.
That's right.
So you know, there's a lot room for, like, I guess, self-therapy, self-exploration within the 2D. I've worked with kids in middle school at an after-school program doing this kind of art class. Also, in a psych ward, I did a couple experiments where we would take a piece of paper. I'd give you a piece of paper, and, you know, I'd say, take a deep breath, close your eyes, and just, like, scribble. And then, you know, once you're done, you know, I'll be turning the page around a little so the scribble's not too, like, I guess, basic. And then we tell the child or the patient, whoever, turn the page around, you know, just look at it and just let me know, like, keep turning it, you know, keep turning it clockwise.
Sure.
And then, you know, see what you find. Oh, I found a whale. Okay, color it. I found a car. Color it. And then you'll have within 5-10 minutes, you know, you have people coming up giving you 3D pictures of stuff, you know, and it's very interactive. So there's a way to bypass that control, that, like, need for control. And there's a need for it, there's also not a need. So, I mean, the world right now...
What's the benefit of not having control?
That's what I'm saying. So, again, to better the world...
At least for the creative process.
Well, I think for the bettering of the world, it's not that good. It's, like, not that needed, because it's a very personal thing, I think. I think it's in order for you... Like, I think it's the first step into realizing that the world is kind of... It needs our help. And that there's a lot of things we can do creatively, community-based, kind of like what these events are like. To promote and bring awareness to how, you know, yes, you know, from not littering to everything else, because everything's very...
That reminds me a lot of what you told me earlier today about that you can't cook a very delicious meal in a dirty kitchen.
Yeah, that's one of my, because, you know, that's what we, that's like, what
hey,
I feel
hold
is...
Hey, hold on a second, I made some pretty good breakfast tacos this morning with some pretty dirty shit.
Well, no,
I say that.
Yes. But again, setting
the change a little bit. I offered them to you guys as well.
Yeah. No, but I'm saying, actually, so here's another little thing that I guess was inspired by very broad thoughts. When I'm painting or doing kind of work, I see it as, you know, my canvas is kind of like a temple and spirits will enter it through me. I'm the conduit, kind of inviting them in.
Hmm.
So a really hungry spirit is like, you know, somebody who's starving. They'll walk into a dirty kitchen and eat scraps because that's like awesome, you know. But somebody who's like, you know, waking up, like if there's a dirty kitchen, they might not be as inclined to cook than if it was clean, you know, like.
That I agree with.
So there's like, you know, there's a thing, there's a kind of a trade-off with like your settings and your choice.
It's ontological design, ultimately.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yourself designs you back.
And in a sense, but it gets really metaphysical because through the paintings, like the more prepared and pristine the canvas, it seems like very exquisite spirits will enter it and make home in it because It's like, you know, but sometimes, you know, yes, you could use anything, and it seems like, I guess, to harbor a different kind of vibration, you know, so everything kind of reflects, and that's another thing about losing kind of grasp of control is trying to describe, I guess, genres or avenues of things. It's that how much is music and art, visual art, similar? Let's look at the, you know, elements of design. You know, everything's very, like, similar. Everything has a lot of... similar elements of its makeup.
So, know. Guys, not to cut things short, but we're running up against time
here.
And, we've got another podcast that we got to do at 5 o'clock. But is there anything else that you want to? Also, want to just say that Sydney, right, is with us as well over here. And I just want to say that she really went after the podcast, and so I just want to acknowledge that we have another
Shout
person
out.
Here, and that she's been quietly reading a book. Over there,
exactly.
And
look, we want to give guys the last word, but I have one quick anecdote.
Go ahead.
Another Halloween. This is to what you were just saying, because that speaks to me. I did some mushrooms on a Halloween around the same couple of years when I was in Flagstaff, Arizona, in grad school, and maybe at that point I had come back. I had quit the academia thing. I'd gone to New Orleans, and I went back. And through like a loophole, because I was already in the graduate program, I was able to get into the creative writing program, right? Which is what I really wanted to do. And so on November 1st of some year, around, I don't know, 95 or 96, I had done mushrooms the night before for Halloween. I woke up like at 7 or 8 a.m. and I knocked out in an hour sitting like the best piece of writing that I've ever written. And it's a children's story. And it's by far to this day the thing that I'm most proud of.
Wow, that is, you know, that's, yeah, that speaks to me.
It's just something just happened.
That's huge.
You know,
there is something childish that comes out. Something pure, very non-judging. You know, it doesn't have a render. It's very raw.
It's a beautiful story.
That's one of the things that psychedelics does. It puts you in an infancy kind of mindset where it's like anything is interesting and curiosity is.
And you know what it was about? Like the central theme, it was about a kid named Billy, but the third act of the story takes place in dots, or what you call ellipses, right? So the whole thing takes place in ellipses, right?
What do you mean by ellipses?
Ellipses is the dot, 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 right? In grammar. Right, instead of an exclamation,
of within
the whole world was the ellipses, right?
How does that work?
Well, you have to read the story, bro.
Wow!
But it's like
you have to do mushrooms.
And there was this wild turkey that the kid had, and then the wild turkey got shot, and then the wild turkey got mushed into like actual wild turkey, and the kid like ran off into the ellipses.
It is.
But it's a really good, it's actually a pretty profound story. Like, it's got a nice little moral sort of
profound.
Thing.
I mean, in some sense, too, like, it's not really an advocacy toward psychedelic use or just to promote the actual, just promoting the benefits, but not necessarily encouraging to do it. Because it isn't
that makes a lot of sense.
It really
is. You're right.
Well, neither are screwdrivers, you know. They're very powerful tools. Screwdrivers, you know, you can get hurt using a drill. So I don't recommend drills for everyone, or hammers, or knives, or anything.
That's a great analogy.
Tools need to be respected. So you should know yourself check yourself, you know, check your environment.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah. Well, look, guys, thank you for coming on, and thanks for your patience while we were talking to Russ. I'm glad you guys were able to overhear that conversation, because I think the visual design and the creative things that he does relate so much to what you guys are talking about.
I can't wait to talk
to
him.
But, all right, folks, it's a goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel's.
Is there anything you guys want to plug real quick? Any website?
Yes.
Anything?
I have a new little short book of drawings. You can look it up on Blurb or Etsy. Just type in Igor Mikushkin. It's YEGORMIKUSHKIN. And add me on Facebook. My website with merch and portfolio is kind of in progress, under construction. But
Peter,
check out some events I'm doing.
Multidisciplinary
Are you on
Twitter?
I'm on Instagram.
Okay.
And one more time, Peter?
Maps.org.
Got it.
Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies.
Cool.
Zendo Projects. SSDP, Students for Sensible Drug Policy.
Nice.
This is that's an organization that allows drug testing kits for people who are interested in experimenting their
yep.
their birthright. Ultimately, they
sure.
So, yeah, MAPS.
Great.
Sure.
Cool. Anything else? Yeah, we good.
No, I think we're good. Yeah, did you want
to? Am I allowed to like talk about an event that I'm working on?
Yeah, go ahead, man.
So, the 23rd of June, there's an event in Virginia in Rigseyville called Yonderville, Y-O-N, Yonderville. I'm curating the art gallery, so there's probably like 15 artists. We're gonna be doing a large mural, 18 by 16 or 8 by 16 feet or so.
Nice.
So yeah, check that out if you're in Virginia.
Cool. Great.
Excellent. Right,
blessings.
Okay, folks, it's agoodlifevape.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans. This has been episode 46 from Bonnaroo 2017. We've got one more episode to do before we wrap it up for this year. And you guys tune in, okay? It was a marathon session this time. We're grateful for all the guests that have come on. Everybody's had great things to say, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Yeah, you're right.